This is Miriam Salome, and you're listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hello, and welcome to or welcome back to the Run to the Top podcast. I'm your host, Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner, and what we do on the show is bring on experts in the running world that help you become a better runner today. In this episode, I speak with Miriam Salome, physical therapist and owner of The Runner's Mechanic here in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Miriam is not only a running friend of mine, but she helps keep runners all over Western North Carolina and beyond running pain-free. Miriam is originally from Mississippi and came to North Carolina to get her biology degree at Chapel Hill at UNC. After getting her master's in physical therapy, Miriam interned at the Mayo Clinic's prestigious biomechanics lab, and she's practiced orthopedic and sports physical therapy for the past 20 years. Miriam specializes in working with runners, hence the name, The Runner's Mechanic. I wanted to get into the specifics on just one topic for today's show. So we chose tendon issues since they are so common in runners. If you've ever had an issue with your Achilles, hamstring, patella, IT band, which is really not a tendon, but we get into that, or any other tendon problem, this is the episode for you. We talk about what causes these issues, how to treat them, and most importantly, how you can keep running while gradually getting pain-free. If you'd like to learn how to keep your tendons happy, enjoy my conversation with the runner's mechanic, Miriam Salome. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Miriam.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks for asking me.
You are the runner's mechanic. What does that mean, and how did you come up with the name?
Yeah, so when I came out of grad school, I've been practicing for about 20 years, and I started the lab, and it was first called Ground Reactions. I narrowed the lab after some different places I had worked in and observed in during school, and after, you know, I would say after about 10 years, I found myself explaining to my clients when they would ask what function I served in their running and in their treatment. And so it's a lot like, you know, a mechanic for your car. You know, as you have your car over time, it needs tune-ups, alignment, you have different, you know, you're putting on some mileage with it, and you just need it tuned up, fixed up, so you can go and not have any problems. And a lot of that has to do, is very similar to what we see with runners throughout their lifespan. So it's not just about treating, you know, an injury, and it's just going to happen once and you're not going to have any more problems. And every time you do, it's something's, you know, awry. It's just that as we go through our life as runners, there's always going to be changes in our system and always ways that we can adapt and have those addressed and go on. So yeah, that's how it started.
So runners are kind of like a car. It's better to have a preventative regular maintenance than just get it fixed when things are broken.
Right, exactly. And that's how I actually started the lab, with that intention a little bit. So, yeah.
Well, you provide a wide range of physical therapy services for runners, but today I would like to talk about just a few specific topics that runners face and what we can do to prevent and treat them. One of the most common issues that comes up with runners is injuries to our tendons, most often the Achilles and the hamstring, but all the other tendons in the legs and feet as well. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on with this?
Yeah, so, and this is one of my favorite topics. Tendon pain is one, it's a very large demographic in runner populations. And I would think that most runners that you talk to have had some kind of niggle in their Achilles and their hamstring. Those are the two biggest ones that we see. Some patella, but Achilles and hamstring. And we kind of differentiate this to an acute onset. So that's when you go through an event, you know, whether as for runners, sometimes it's like a, you know, really hard workout or something that's a little bit atypical for their program. And they have a little soreness and aching in their tendon. And it's for a short period of time. And we call that more of an itis, okay, like a tendonitis. And the idea is that the tendon at that point has more of an inflammatory cycle, and it should resolve with a little bit of the kind of normal rest, ice, you know, care for it a bit, and then it should resolve and go on. The second category is more of a tendinopathy, and we start to classify tendon pain in this group is when tendon pain is going on for longer than 12 weeks. We start to classify that more as a chronic injury. And we treat it a little bit differently. The inflammatory cycle, there's still inflammation there, but it's not as prevalent. And we actually find when we study these tendons, physiologically, they're a little bit different. They have, more varicosities that have grown into the tendon. So smaller blood vessels have grown into the tendon. The actual makeup of the tendon is a little bit different. So the collagen fibers are, not as well aligned. They're a little bit disorganized. So people that have had some chronic tendon issues start to notice the tendon actually looks a little bit thicker. It's looking different probably than the other side. In addition to noticing they're having chronic pain that's going on longer than 12 weeks.
So the thicker tendon, is that because it's healing improperly, or what causes it to thicken like that?
Yeah, it's super interesting. They actually find when they do different histology studies of the tendon that the fiber, the collagen of the tendon has actually changed in its organization. So it's actually more disorganized. It kind of looks, if you look at it, some of the anatomy studies, it almost looks like a little blob. So you see this kind of really nice striated tendon, and then you kind of see this kind of mass or blob of a tendon, and then it goes back into a regular tendon. So it's actually just a portion of the tendon that is starting to change a little bit with that chronic injury.
Okay. Well, let's talk specifically about the Achilles first. Why is this so common? Who is at risk for this, and what do we do about it?
Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of perfect that your demographic, I think you mentioned, was between 35 and 55 years of age. These kinds of tendon issues are usually in this population. So after about 30, we start to lose some of the recovery properties of our tendons. So we don't recover quite as fast after an activity, especially with running. That's one of them. And so the water content of the tendon is actually a little bit less. And so these are the populations that we see it in, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Also, this seems kind of strange to think about, but the tendon actually becomes less stiff. And you don't want to think about tendon stiffness in the sense of tight hamstrings or tight calves. Tendon stiffness, the way I like to explain it to clients, is if you have a brand new rubber band and you stretch it between your thumbs and let it go, that the rubber band will recoil, and that's what's going to shoot it across the room. Okay, so it's still very springy. If you take an older rubber band, like, you know, out of a drawer, and you try to do that, either A, sometimes that rubber band just stays stretched out and it doesn't spring back, or it just breaks. Okay, right. So that's probably the best way to think about tendon injury for these things as we age. We lose that elastic property. It's that stiffness that helps it recoil when we run, and that's what we need to use that elastic energy when we run.
Okay, so we're like brittle rubber bands. Is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's exactly right. What happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do we do to prevent this, or at least push it down the road, or specifically with Achilles? Because I think I hear Achilles injuries most often. And so what would you say you would do if you felt that niggle after, let's say, a speed workout?
Yeah, so if you're starting to notice that something is becoming a chronic, are you talking about more of a chronic problem, like someone that's been dealing with it for a while, or when they just start to feel it?
Either way. Yeah. Let's go over both.
Okay. So, say you just start to feel it. All right. This is something you just really don't want to allow it to advance. Try not to ignore it and push into it over the next several runs. Kind of acknowledge, like, how sore is that tendon? You can start to ice it. I really would start to modify your running. It doesn't mean you need to stop. And actually, tendons don't like, inactivity. Tendons actually do better with some loading. And that's one of the nice things about tendon rehab is you can still load the tendon. So, but you do want to start to bring down that activity. So I'd stay away from, speed workouts for a little bit and hill workouts for a little bit. Ice it and do some gentle calf massage. And usually 9 out of 10 times that really acute, you know, just sudden onset will get better, just like any normal injury. But I really would respect it, especially if you're, you know, age 30 or above.
Okay.
And it should get better. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about why hills are a problem for the Achilles?
Sure. And so for listeners, I like to use a little bit of imagery when I talk about it. So if you're sitting at home and you can prop one foot up and you take a look at the heel. If you run your hand down your calf, and between your calf and your heel bone is the mid portion of the Achilles. Okay. And that's where we tend to get some of our Achilles tendinopathy, the mid portion part. As that tendon goes down into the heel bone, it actually rounds around the heel. Okay. When the foot is flexed, that tendon is being put on a lot of compression. And so when we're going up a hill, that's when we're having more of that range of the heel, and the tendon is wrapped around that bone and adds to compressive forces. So it's a lot harder work and stretch on that Achilles to go uphill. So if you're trying to modify your activity and you're trying to choose what you want to do to still run, but not overstress the tendon during those times, avoiding hill workouts and speed work are the two things that you can kind of manipulate a little bit and keep running.
Okay. So downhill would not be a problem. Just the
downhill would not be a problem. Exactly.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, moving up to the hamstring, let's talk about that. Who's at risk for that? Is it the same population, or what are there any differences you see between people who have hamstring injuries versus Achilles injuries?
Yeah. So, and when you look at the research about the breakdown with genders, you will see the balance tipped a little bit more towards males for the Achilles, and maybe a little bit more towards females for the hamstring. Anecdotally, in the clinic, I see a lot more males for the Achilles, and I do see maybe a 60-40 split for the males, females, with the high hamstring tendinopathy. But, and again, the age range that still applies to both, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s. There are some medications that put people more at risk, high cholesterol, blood sugar issues. So there's some health, you know, predictors with that too, but, and especially with runners, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, let's start talking about treatment. You know, we hear about for the Achilles, some people say do the eccentric drops. Some people do say the calf raises. Some say do one but not the other. So what should we be doing for rehab for that?
Yeah. And one thing I probably should have answered in the prior question, but training errors are probably one of the biggest reasons people can start to kick off some of these tendon problems. So I really recommend, no matter what kind of runner you consider yourself to be, to keep a log, all right, about what you're doing and your dosage. And so this applies also to social running. I know it's actually now it's a little bit easier not to get into that. But if you're doing, a lot of people will feel pressure to do some harder runs more in consecutive days for whatever reasons. Those things can really tip the scales a bit. So what I really want to say is being aware of training errors or doing things that feel like you're really hitting the intensity back-to-back days or more frequently than you normally would. Those things can definitely tip the scales with tendon issues. So that's one of the things. So what to do to make it better? And, you know, I totally understand especially being a non-health professional, how there's just a quagmire of information out there, because in the professional world, there is a quagmire of information out there. What is better? And kind of the background with the eccentric drops, and just to kind of explain that, that started a long time ago with a researcher named Alfredson. He was having some Achilles problems and developed this protocol of three sets of 15 with the knees straight and the knees bent of heel drops twice a day. You know, so you're looking at 180 repetitions of eccentric heel drops every day for several weeks. And that's kind of where it started. And it does hold some water. So people that do try that sometimes do get a little bit better. But I think there's been some really nice research where they're like, you know, I think they average that 180 reps. I think they average that to be almost 5 hours of exercise a week doing those repetitions. And so compliance is a huge issue. I mean, I don't know if everyone really can do 5 hours of eccentric heel drops, you know, a week. So they kind of polished it up a little bit. And there's, I would say, two newer schools of thought I kind of talk to clients about. I would say A, you could either have the choice to do three sets of 15 daily of, so if we're talking about Achilles, three sets of 15 daily of both concentric, so that means going up onto your toes for a count of three, and also eccentric down back to the floor for a count of three, doing those, so 45 reps a day, or going to the gym, doing some weighted exercises the same way, the heel raises 3 seconds up and 3 seconds down, and picking 3 exercises. So you can do it 3 times a week and doing 3 different exercises at the gym, working on that, or doing it daily. But they do find the calf weakness is something that's common with Achilles issues, and working on the concentric, or the actually going up into the heel raising part, is just as important as working on the eccentric or the heel lowering part.
Okay.
So yeah. So, you know, if we went with the daily exercise, if someone wanted to try that, you would work on 3 sets of 15 daily, working on a count of 3, going up onto the toes for a count of 3, down back, lowering the heel for a count of 3. And then you can slowly actually weight those exercises as they get easier by putting on like a heavy backpack or, you know, a stuffed rucksack or something like that, so that we're starting to load the tendon heavier and heavier throughout the 10 to 12 weeks.
Okay, great. And I have heard different advice for insertional tendonitis, and I've heard different advice for if the problem is a little higher up. Do you use the same protocol for both, or do you treat those differently?
Yeah. So, and that's where it gets, you know, a little bit complicated, but it's important to know exactly where you're having the problem. So if I go back into that imagery, for people that are listening, and if you work your hand down your calf, the part between your calf and your heel, you'll feel the middle part of the Achilles tendon, that's mid portion. And that's what, when they talk about mid portion Achilles tendinopathy, that's where you'll find the painful lump, is in the middle part of that tendon. If you continue to work your finger down into the bone where the tendon starts to insert, that's insertional. Insertional tends to be a little bit more difficult to treat. It's a little bit more irritable. So in those cases, a lot of times we'll start with the exercises, but instead of dropping the heel off of a step, we actually do it on a flat floor. So you're not actually stressing the tendon too much when you go into the stretch. Those cases may actually do well too, to have a tiny heel lift or a little bit of a lift shoe sometimes, to start to calm it down a little bit.
Yeah. I was going to ask about shoes and orthotics and things like that. Are those helpful? Can you use those on long term? Should people with lower leg problems always wear a kind of a stacked non-minimalist shoe?
Yeah. So, and there's two types of people with Achilles problems. There's people that are tight, and there's people that are super flexible. Okay. And so,
okay.
And the way that you maybe can differentiate yourself at home, if you want to do some home tests, is if you put your foot, like your big toe, approximate it to the wall, and keeping your foot completely flat, keeping your heel on the floor, see if you can bend your knee enough to touch the wall. Okay.
So you're facing the wall, you mean?
You're facing the wall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the toe is touching the wall, the big toe.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And you slowly bend the knee, and you see if you can bring your knee to touch the wall while your foot is completely flat. If you can't, you're definitely tight in your heel cords. Okay. Those type of people that have Achilles problems, they usually respond better to a lot of soft tissue massage of the actual calf belly, so the soleus and gastroc heads. They usually respond a little bit better to start, have a little bit of a raised shoe or doing a little bit of a heel lift. They may respond better to night splints and things like that. So that type of person, a tight person that also has Achilles tendinopathy, tends to do well in that kind of grouping. Some people, I know it sounds weird, but they're super flexible. Tightness is not their issue. They have more of that. Their Achilles is just more of that, stretched out rubber band that's not recoiling.
Okay.
And they, those treatments don't seem to do as much, don't help them as much.
Okay.
It's not, the good thing is it doesn't hurt to try if you do want to try doing like a little heel lift or something like that, but it's about a 50-50 response rate with those.
Okay.
Yeah.
And once the rubber band is overstretched, that's it, right? I mean, there's no like getting back that elasticity, or can the body kind of heal that?
Exactly. And that's the crazy thing that they're finding with these loading protocols. Like, why would you start loading a tendon? But they do find this kind of reversal. So when they start looking, they do ultrasound diagnostics and imaging, a reversal of the tendon structure. So it starts to look more normal. So all of a sudden, remember how I said, like a lot of times it'll kind of look like this, this kind of blob in the middle of a tendon. It starts to look a little bit more like a striated tendon. So it starts to have those properties restored to it. And they also find that those varicosities, those blood vessels that grow in response to trauma, they start to disappear. And they seem to be correlate with people's pain levels. So it's strange, but the high loading protocols do tend to restore that tendon property.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. All right. And so for the high hamstring, what is the PT for that?
The good thing is it's very similar to what we just talked about with the Achilles. So again, for listeners sitting at home, if you were sitting, okay, the hamstring inserts, for the most part, what we call the sit bone, all right? For a lot of people that have hamstring issues, sitting hurts, usually for the most part too. But when the hip is in the position of sitting, so when the hip is flexed, that is when the tendon is also wrapping around the bone and it's compressed. So things like speed work, again, heel work can set that off. It's very similar to the same things with Achilles. So we can treat it the same way. So if you're going to modify your running terrain, getting more on flats, and making sure you're not doing too high of an intensity so you can keep running. And there is actually a pain score, pain level score you can use. So in your head, zero being no tendon pain and 10 being a lot. If you can stay within that 2 to, I would say, at most 4 or 5 range, we find in our studies that you can actually keep running. So, you know, decrease the dosage of your running and your intensity, but you can keep running while you're doing the tendon loading protocol. For the hamstring, you would start with things where the leg is straight. So people are most familiar with a bridge. Okay. So when you do a bridge, so if you're lying on a floor and you lift your hips, that is loading the hamstring tendon, but it's not wrapping it around the hip. The hip is not flexing. The contrast to that is a deadlift. Okay. So if someone has a really hot hamstring tendinopathy, I don't want to start them with a deadlift. Because that's flexing the hip and it's going to probably aggravate that a little bit. I start them with loading protocols where the hip is straight. So okay. Things like straight leg bridge, bent leg bridge, frog bridges, those kinds of things. Those are nice to start with.
So a lot of glute work basically too. Yeah.
Yeah. But the hip position is super important in the beginning.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. So what about the other tendon issues? I mean, we've talked about some of the most common ones, but, you know, we see runners that have all sorts of issues with tendons, you know, the outside of the leg, the inside of the leg, the top of the foot, all of that. Can you talk a little bit about those and how common those are?
Yeah. So glute tendinopathy is one. So if you rub the side of your hip, that's one place people can start to get that. An extension of that, we're treating IT band syndrome like these chronic tendon issues. It is pretty much a long tendon. So IT band is one of them. You can treat plantar fasciitis like a tendon issue because that is an extension of the collagen of the Achilles. So that's another one. Patella tendon is another one that we see. And we do, we are, the nice thing is we're trying to cohesively as a profession, we're able to address these and find good results with doing these tendon loading protocols with these different kinds of tendon issues. So that's kind of exciting in the sense that now we have, you know, at least some strategies for those, when they are truly a tendinopathy.
Okay. So basically whatever tendon it is, there's a loading protocol and you can still keep running as long as you're not in too much pain.
Right. If you stay true to kind of that, if you dim it down a little bit as far as your intensity and your dosage, you stay away from whatever. It depends on what the terrain is and what the tendon is. So I do recommend talking to somebody, you know, about the specific kind of tendon it is, so you can figure out what you need to do. But yes, there's a loading protocol. There's a different way to modify your running. But the biggest thing is usually speed work and hills for that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the IT band. You know, some of the issues that I've seen, the IT band gets upset when there's something wrong with your ankles or there's something wrong higher up, like in your hips. Can you talk about that and how those are connected?
So the muscle bellies of the IT band are in the hip, okay? One is the glute medius. It's in the back of the hip. It's kind of around your back pocket area. And one slightly in the front, the TFL. And they turn this huge band of fascia that goes down the leg and inserts and kind of merges into the side of the knee and a little bit into the lower leg fascia. So, you know, I think a long time ago, people would talk about tight IT bands and things like that. And theoretically, they don't actually get tight. But if there is excessive movement or weakness at the hip, okay, so if the hip, especially like if we talk about just about running, and when we're landing in our running stance and the hip is moving a whole lot, it continues to tether that IT band, and it can irritate the top of the hip around the greater trochanter, so around the side of the hip up top. Some people have pain around the outside of the knee. They call it friction syndrome. Again, another IT band problem, but around the knee. And again, as it goes down to the lower leg, though, so if you are someone that has an excessive amount of motion in certain directions, it can also cause that same kind of IT band issue. It's nice to kind of see, you know, what, that's why I do a lot of gait analysis, kind of see where people are having their motion problems. But in general, if you want to look at IT band, if we're talking like in a kind of a, just a generic kind of way, working on hip abduction, so things like side bridges, leg lifts, those are great to do, working on some of that frontal plane stability as far as treating that. And there's also kind of, it's kind of hard to describe over the audio, but there's a nice tendon loading exercise for the IT band where we flex the knee and always do a split squat. And you can start to load it a little bit that way.
Okay.
But yeah, so usually it's problems at the hip.
Okay. Okay. Well, and if somebody comes in to you and they've been suffering for 12 weeks and they've been trying some of this PT work on their own, when is that point where more invasive procedures and treatment have to come? Like what's the point where, you know, maybe you need to have surgery or something like that? How do you know when it's really, really severe?
Yeah. I mean, and that's a great question because in the research currently, even with these tendon loading programs, if someone's even doing it perfectly to the T and to the best of their ability, there's still about a 40% rate of chronic tendon issues. So it doesn't mean that necessarily someone's done something wrong, but the non-responders with those protocols, we do start to look at some different things. Unfortunately, surgery really, I mean, you can look at it fortunate, unfortunately, surgery really isn't a great option for tendon issues. It's a lot different than having like a rupture or something like that. So when you start looking at the next level with things, we start looking at PRP injections, platelet-rich plasma injections. You probably have heard about those.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and still in that world, it's kind of 50-50. And the physicians that do those, you know, will kind of, you know, say the same thing. But what they do is they spin out the platelets and reinject them into the tendon and try to incite your own healing response so you can heal the tendon to another level. And, you know, the good thing about it is there's no downside. You know, it's one of those things that either works or it doesn't. Usually, you know, the physicians here that I work with that do it, if you get it done and you find that you have good response, you have a positive response, they usually do a series of three. Unfortunately, insurance does not pay for that. So they are, you know, out of pocket expenses, but usually if you respond to the first one, you do, you know, another one, a follow up in a couple months. And so they either really work or they don't. And so it's one of those 50-50 things. Just know if you [S2] Right. [S1] Go in for it, that they pretty much shut you down out of activity for about 2 weeks because the needle has pierced the tendon. So be prepared for that. You know, it's completely normal. It's just what you do, but it is a nice, option.
Yeah, but you do have to stop running while it takes hold, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because they do actually put a needle into the tendon, and they don't want to risk any kind of risk of rupture. So they do kind of shut down the area for about 2 weeks.
So, I mean, I know tendons take a really long time to heal, and is it something that even if you do everything right, you could just be one of those people that has a cranky hamstring just forever, or is there hope that doing everything right, eventually you will be pain-free?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think you can definitely have the hope that you can recover from it. I would say this, that if you have recovered from a tendon injury, to continue doing the exercises that made you better, throughout your life, because I do believe that it's one of those things that needs a little bit of care, which is not usually a big deal. I mean, usually you're doing some kind of strength training a couple of times a week, but doing whatever you know, protocol, whether the bridges or the heel drops or whatever it is, just keeping that integrated into your program.
Yeah. I think that's what happens is we get healed and we're like, oh, I'm all better. I don't have to do all the work anymore. And then we get injured again. Right.
Yeah, I know. But I don't think there's anything that, you know, people are a bad runner. People can be a successful runner for their entire life and have those things happen. It's just part of running. So,
yeah. Well, in this crazy time, I would want to ask you, how are telehealth visits going and how do they work if somebody wants to schedule an appointment with you?
Yeah, so I started doing a lot more of those, obviously, when the virus hit and offering that option. They've been good. It's funny, I've had more of my out-of-state people, you know, continue to use those. And it's been a lot easier, I think, using it with they've come out with a lot of great programs now that you can do with HIPAA compliance and things like that. So, but they're going well. Unfortunately, I mean, not fortunately, but like, once real people realize I'm doing telehealth and in session visits, they tend just to want to come in. So, you know, I haven't been doing a whole lot of telehealth lately, but it is an option if people need them. But I've actually treated a couple of these tendon disorders with the telehealth because it's easy to show people when we're doing this, over the video, how to start a protocol. So, they've been really great in that sense.
Cool. It's the way of the future. Maybe even when this is over, you'll still be doing that.
I will always offer. I actually offered it before for some of my out-of-state people. But I'll always keep it on my appointment program after that, because sometimes I found a lot of people just had some niggling questions like, hey, maybe it wasn't enough to come in, but they were just sitting at home with, you know, having these issues. And so I'll always have those. I think it's been really fun doing them.
Okay, great. Well, we're getting into the home stretch, so I have a few questions that I ask everyone. If you could go back and talk to yourself when you started running, what advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, you know, I probably was the most unsophisticated runner that anyone has ever met when I started. So, you know, I grew up in Mississippi. I just ran on the beach in the morning and it wasn't, I really didn't have any exposure to runners. So I didn't have a watch or anything and I listened to a Walkman. So I was pretty much like a happy runner when I was younger. So to be honest, I probably would have my younger self talk to my current self. That now, you know, it gets a little bit more in my head about things, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
It's a much different time for running. But yeah, I think I probably have it go the other way and just always remind myself to have fun and just enjoy it and know why I'm out there and that kind of thing.
Love it. Love it. What is the greatest gift running has given you?
You know, I'm a pretty big introvert. And so I think running always gives me a place to get my thoughts out of my head a little bit and always relaxes me. So, I really always appreciate for that. And, also as I've aged, which I've noticed obviously as I got into my 40s, it's really fun to find still new things that I can either make a goal or be good at, even though there are things that probably weren't so like 5 years ago. So I think it's great that you can discover new things about yourself, you know, as you become a quote unquote aging runner. So I like that a lot.
And you met your husband running too, right?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say him.
and him. Yeah. But he's like, yeah, we unfortunately, we never would run together because that's not physically possible. But yeah, I ran through that. Exactly.
And finally, where can listeners connect with you?
I have a website, therunnersmechanic.com, and my email is runnersmechanic@gmail.com. So always feel free. You can always email me or text me or drop me a line.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Miriam. This has been great. I'm glad we took a deep dive into tendon issues, which I know there are lots of runners out there, especially a lot of new runners these days that are going through this. So I think it's definitely been helpful. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Good. Thank you so much, Claire. I really appreciate it.
I am so glad we could have Miriam on the show. She's amazingly talented and knowledgeable with her work with runners, and I hope that you found something that you can take away that will help your running. I see a lot of runners with tendon issues, and it's great to know that by loading the tendon, you can actually repair it and make it stronger. I was afraid Miriam was going to say that once we have stretched our old rubber bands out too far, that they would never go back. Thankfully, there is hope with consistent practice and care. And that's it for today's Run to the Top. If you like the work we are doing here, please show your support with a quick iTunes review. It really makes a difference in the work we're able to do for you. This has been Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner, and I hope you'll join me again next week. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.